Mr. O'Sullivan, Reel 27. Right, Mr. O'Sullivan, you were talking about on the Straits of Hallow, you met this American patrol.
Well, we saw this American patrol prior to us catching us, and there was a doorway open, and there was two women just inside. There was obviously trying to catch the tired American soldiers. It was going to be. One was another. 40, 50 year old, and the other was a daughter in the 20s. So we dived into their house. We weren't invited in, we just got in off the road out of the way. And what happened to the two Americans at this time, I don't know, because although we went together from the airfield down to the other, we sort of got separated, and they must have missed the Americans as well, because they all got put together eventually. And we tried to get sex with these two women. We left them some rations and that sort of thing, but we've never been in my room. And that's the only time we met any of them.
Now, what was the routine? You're in this camp, you're on the airfield. What happened the next day you were there?
We must have been there 3 or 4 days. We got, as I said, we had the extra rations. It was not as good as English compared rations, but because there was that many men at Halle, you only got sort of one meal a day. If you remember, that's like at dinner time. So there was extra, there was biscuits in them, there was chocolate, I think it was German chocolate, there was some cigarettes, most of them were Polish type with it. Like a cigarette and then a tube, like a cigarette in front of me, but there was some of them smoking. And went on for 2 or 3 days, and then the American sergeant came into the tent and he said, there's a plane leaving for France and England, a Dakota, and there's 10 men. And there was about 10 English in this tent, and there was an American, and a couple of Frenchmen. So we, that's what I was sitting as well. Although the plane was flying to France and then to England, we didn't entertain the Frenchmen on this particular plane. Anyway, it took us.
So you were put on this plane?
Yeah, and there was, as soon as we were taken off, as soon as we took off, it wasn't a comfortable ride in the Dakota because there was no seats, it was set on ammo boxes and anything. And we knew as soon as we were taken off, then one of the others was sick, or we felt sick anyway. And we flew to France, we landed somewhere in France. And we took off almost immediately on a different plane. Although it was another Dakota, we changed planes in France. And it flew to North England.
Now, the plane to France, was that an American plane?
An English Dakota.
A crew rather.
A crew, and we were American. Mm.
And what about the plane that flew from France to England? Was
it was English.
English crew.
Pilot, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now,
only a couple of crewmen, I remember, on a Dakota.
Now, while you were in Halle, you were still with Phil Carrick and who else?
Joe. All four of us were still together. Joe Price, Phil Carrick, Georgie Gent, and myself. We were in that tent.
And you've all gone on the plane together?
We all came on together.
Now, when you were in Halle, obviously you described it was full of prisoners of war. Did you meet anybody else that you knew in Halle?
Can you name the name? A lad from the Swimport. He used to live back way into us in Dickie Blanchett. Dick Blanchett. He was an army bloke, same as me. And the biggest. I didn't know Dickie was in the army. He must have gone after me. Because when Dickie Blanchett was a kid, he slept in a hut in the back garden because he suffered with it was some sort of a disease that he went to the isolation hospital after we came home from Germany.
Tuberculosis.
He slept outside in a shed in the yard when he was a kid at school with us. And he was the same age as me, and I was surprised to meet him in the army. Because, you know, I always thought he got TB. And funny enough, when he came home from Germany, he spent nearly 3 months in the TB hospital school. Afterward, you know, because he was he passed for the army, that was the most.
And he'd been in another work camp in the area?
He was nearer to Berlin, in the work camp.
And
he saw Berlin. He actually visited Berlin before. There was a short period of time, same as when we marched back to Schmiedeberg, and say that week he was anywhere. I mean, and during that time, before he went to Holland, he was released by the Russians originally, but he was handed over to the Americans, you know, and Berlin was further east than was wanted. So how he got to there, I don't know.
Were there any Russians, there was Russian prisoners of war, obviously, but were there any Russian army troops at all in the Halle area at this time?
I never saw them. Just Americans, and there was a hell of a lot of them.
What about the other men from the camp? Did you meet anybody else from the Bad Schmiedeberg camp?
No. Because they came later, didn't they?
So the last sighting of those was the men that you left that had been marched off, yeah. And the two men that had been left behind. That was the end of that.
That's the last I saw of any of them.
Now, so you just basically switched planes in France?
We went from we got off one Dakota, walked across the Tarmac, and got on another Dakota. And we flew to Norfolk.
And what happened there?
Well, we met by there was Red Cross, sorry army. We were given cigarettes, chocolate, taken into a reception area, and with tea and biscuits and sandwiches. And then we were taken to what I do remember that when we landed at Norfolk. We were met by some army men with de-icing powder, and they squirted it up your inside, you, just like a vim tin, and they squirted it all went up you, and they squirted it back your head and all that. And then they took us into this reception where we had tea and sandwiches and cigarettes and all the smokers, and then they took us to a bathhouse. Now this bathhouse was stripped off. Some of the lads had stuff with them. I actually had a musical box and I had a cigarette lighter. And I gave the there was a corporal in charge of this bath party. And I gave it, anything you want to say when you get to this NCO. And I gave him this musical box. And I also had a lighter made from a shell, which I left in the pocket, in the uniform, in the blouse pocket. And there were some letters as well, and what I was trying to do this. They always get photographs. We carried these letters, and when I came back, as you came out of the bathhouse, a bath, a shower, washed your hair and come out at the other end, you got a new kit. It was just like a human kit again from when we first joined the army. There was battle dress blouse, trousers, socks, underpants. It was just a fresh issue of kit out of there. And then after, when I went back, that corporal brought the stuff, what he'd got, what he was saving for this particular bat party, and he brought it to the other end of the battle. But I said to him, I had a lighter. And so he said, you didn't give me, I said, no, I didn't give you a lighter, I left him in trousers pocket, or my blouse pocket. And he said, that would be going to the incinerator, the rescue crew. So, what else, whether it did or not, I don't know. Whether it was, whether they bothered, you know, the ones that took it themselves, which they could have done. But he had it, and that's the musical box.
Now, there's a story behind the musical box, could you just tell us that?
Well, it was, this music, it's not a musical box as such, it's a decanter, or similar to the guy. It's a gin bottle or a square whiskey bottle, what's been made into a musical box. And it used to stand on Mrs. Price's mantelpiece. And I was fascinated by it when I was there first. So I used to wind it up and go lift it up, and it plays Oh My Papa. And this is just before I left. Then I took the boots, actually, two pair of boots. I more or less swapped it for two pair of boots. And go through. The only thing that ever went on me was a cork.
And you've still got it?
Yeah.
Right, and you've brought your this musical box from your mantelpiece. And if we just lift it up.
I can't recognise it, can I?
So it's still in working order after all this time. And that was the only thing that survived from that era.
Yeah, well, it's just for me anyway. What anybody else got, I don't know.
Now, so you arrived, you'd been deloused, you'd had new kit, and so on. Was there any interrogation by the British, a debriefing of any kind?
Yeah, we were there 3 days actually at Norfolk. Well, it was just outside my apartment. We were there about 3 days, and we had a medical exam. There was officers there from the intelligence corps. They weren't interrogating us for any particular reason. They were just taking details of who we were, where we'd been, where we was captured. Made sure we had a medical. And then on the third morning, the first thing we did was send a telegram to our TO, my dear wife, or my own, to my parents, obviously, to say we would be home, we was in England and safe, and we could be home within 36 hours. And so they, we're in the medical. They said, where do you come from? You from Scunthorpe. You know, you sit over there. Where do you come from? You're from wherever, Manchester, wherever. But they only picked out people who was from Scunthorpe, Doncaster, and this area, and there was about four of us. So I didn't know the others at any particular night. And he said, no, you're going to Scunthorpe, and you're going to Doncaster, and you're going to Gainsborough, and you're going to Gainsborough. VD is right in that area. Be very careful. And really, in fact, this was the medical officer, was it? Was saying it. And he got us travel warrants, took us to the station, and he was on the way in. When I gets to Tigger Bridge, there was a little lad called Roger Navy. He was in the Navy, the Army. He was good in the Army, but he'd who had just been on loan, I believe, in the Navy. And he said, we were talking about where I'd been on loan anyway. We got as far as Kidney. And I said, Dale, I'm worried about most. He said, no, well, what? He said, I said, there's a bit of what we gathering as always, Jason. Because I've a lot of brothers and sisters and family, and I thought, and I'm dreading it. Well, he said, jump on the train, keep in the cars, keep out of the way, he said, I'll just go and look for you. Because he lived in the same street as me. When we were kids, he knew my family. And he came back, he said, there's about 30 of them. I said, oh, maybe I don't want. And if you notice at the railway station, there's an entrance where you go into the trains. But if you go a little way past it, there's a goods entrance. So I stopped on the train, got off at the last minute, and got my family were outside the station because there were that many people there meeting the people off this train. But it was all outside the station. So I went past into the goods entrance, and I stood in the goods entrance until the family moved away, till they'd gone back home, thinking I went on that train. And when that's almost on, we'd gone, I came out, it was just my father and the oldest brother left. And he didn't come down to me. And then when I saw my dad, I just said, come on, lad, go in the taxi, and we go on before they did, to Long Road. So when we get to Long Road, my mother is flitted this time, from one side of the road, from the four-bedroom house, across the road, she'd swap with her Mrs. Robbins. So I went to the Long Road, and then the rest of them started to turn up. Then we got over the, I don't know, you shouldn't be embarrassed when you meet your family, but it was embarrassing. Not embarrassing, but I don't know.
Why weren't you keen on meeting them at the station?
Because I had a brother-in-law. My oldest brother-in-law was a right sloppy person, you know, and I knew he'd be all over me, you know, over me, and that sort of thing didn't interest me at all, and kissing sisters and sister-in-law, I didn't look forward to that at all. Anyway, when they got home in the house, they wanted to know it was a lot better.
Now, what state were you in physically when you got back?
I weighed about 7 stone 8.
What was your normal weight?
10.6.
So you lost about 3 stone.
I boxed at 10.6 when I was in the Indians.
So, even though, as you've described, your conditions in Germany were better the longer you went on.
But I never put any weight back in.
You're still 3 stone underweight.
Yeah.
So your conditions can't have been.
Well, they weren't. I mean, they weren't very good for the Germans, but and even Mrs. Price, she had a reserve of food, they weren't overfed by any means. And I don't think the food got enough. Potatoes was the biggest thing yet, all the time I was in Germany, 3 times a week at least, we had kartoffel soup, potato soup, and we used to boil potatoes. We never peeled potatoes in Germany until after they were cooked, and you peel them while they're hot, so there was no waste. And then they were just crushed up and put in a really big pan and made into a soup. And the only thing, there'd be salt in and cumin seed and caraway mixed in, just to give it flavour.
What about meat?
Meat with very little meat at all.
I should have asked you earlier when we were talking about, you know, your work preparing the food. Was there any variation in that?
Sometimes it would be carrots. Sometimes it would be a sort of a stew. If there was any meat, there wasn't enough meat to give each person some meat. So it went into a stew sort of area. But nearly all the food was done in soup or stew type. It was never. You never got mashed potatoes and meat.
So it was always a bowl full of.
It was always a bowl. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, you arrived back home, your family knew you were safe now. What about mail back and forward? When was the last time, when was the last time they'd heard from you until you turned up at the station? Had your mail from Germany continued to get through till the end, or what?
No, it didn't get through. I should say the last letter my mother got would be a month or 6 weeks before we actually got home. And there was only postcards, and a lot of them was wrapped, a lot of the letter itself was wrapped out with the censors.
So there's a 6 week, like at least a 6 week gap between.
Before they got to know where we were, and we're getting that telegram saying that we're safe in England and we'd be home within 36 hours. You see, they didn't even say when they were going home. They said within 36 hours.
So there were people at the station just.
So my dad and my dad had to think mostly would make nearly everybody train in. And when we got, it was the end of the 36 hours by the time I did go and get home.
Did your family remark on your physical appearance? What did they think of how you looked?
My mother was a bit shocked, but I didn't look too bad. I didn't look too bad to myself anyway.
Compared to the other prisoners that you saw at Halle, was everybody in that kind of condition?
No, was as well as a lot of them there. Some of the Americans were better because they hadn't been captured as long. But I mean, some of the prisoners who were. Would have been released after countries weren't as well as we were. It depended how long you'd been a prisoner and where you'd been a prisoner. Because if we'd have stopped in Germany much longer, even with the Red Cross passes, we'd lived on potatoes, which they got pot bellied. Because we was undernourished in a lot of ways, weren't we? You know what I mean? And we'd have got pot bellied.
What did you think of the treatment that you received from the British authorities as you arrived back in England?
Oh, it was very good. We couldn't get home quick enough. I mean, then 3 days in North Hollywood, where we lived in as well. We weren't doing a lot, but we couldn't go out. And I should say, there was that many people passing through. He was well fed, he was clean, he was well dressed. And they issued us with new kit and all that sort of thing. New pay books, money. They gave us some money. Money that they owed, you know, what it was in town. So, I mean, they didn't give us 20 quid to just to pay. They gave us money, give us a pay, we had a pay day. I just don't know which hand roll, but it was quite a good bit of money. So you could only different amounts got, obviously, they got, say they give us 7 weeks' pay. If you were a private, you got 7 weeks' pay. In my case, which was 10 or 6 a week. But the sergeant would get more, so he would get 7 weeks' pay. Didn't we get 13 weeks' pay? I think we got 13 weeks money because we was coming on for 13 weeks leave.
And they told you that?
Yes. But we had. When we had this medical, we was graded. I was graded B7.
And when was the medical?
Well, I was at Northolt. But, before we went to a man leave.
And what does B7 mean?
It's something to do with feet. Because after that, I was excused boots. I never had to wear boots anymore.
And could that have something to do with the clogs?
I
wonder where those. Now, so you got back to Scunthorpe. You'd been away for well over 2 years.
Yeah.
How had the place changed?
Well, it was full of prisoners of war, Italian. I was working on farms round about, and there was a prisoner of war camp just outside from the store. But they walked about town and they went into pubs. There were no sentries with them. And I said to me, the brother older than me had been at home all the time, I said, look at these bastards, they're walking about, and there he was working and then locked up. And then the Britannia, the pub at the Britannia corner, the Britannia pub was still sitting, so it was still there. Him and his Jock Pearson, who had never been in the forces, the trial, then was allowed to try to get into the movie. They started in there with some high ties. And the police arrested him, but they didn't arrest the high ties, they arrested the police. It was only because I'd said, like, I'm not really better, but they're walking about times all the way around. And they did. They walked about all the freedom in the world. There was Italian, there weren't German people.
And what were your thoughts about still being in the army at this time?
Well, at 13 weeks it was just lovely, wasn't it? No work.
You just put that to the back of your mind? Now, you go back to Scunthorpe, how had the war affected the rest of your family and your friends?
Well, luckily we had a brother in the army and a brother in the navy, who was all safe.
Had you been able to communicate with?
No.
Not when you're a prisoner?
No. Mm. Well, you only got a letter in the postcard every so often, so it went home.
Went to your mother?
Because your mother would move, and not only that, mother would be, if anybody was in touch with your brother in the navy, your mother would be. And so was your lad in the army. He'd be writing home and she'd be writing to him. So it was best to communicate it. Well, not only that. I mean, not to be the same. The life was that organised. You know, we did exactly the same thing day in and day out. Whatever. There was nothing to write about, nothing fresh to write about.
And what about casualties amongst your friends?
One I went to school with, George, and the fellow, he was an air gun, he was killed. The Air Force, the sailor who was on the train, the female world of women, his older brother Jackie was killed. There was, Jock Pearson's younger brother was in the army, he was killed. There was one or two lads I went to school in the army, went to school with us, but Jimmy Ferriby and I was friends at school, and he was Air Force, and his older brother was killed as well. Frank Skinner, another lad I went to school with, was in the army, he was killed, and his brother there was captured.
Yeah, and a post-war photograph of Scunthorpe PWS.
That bloke, Jim Skinner, his younger brother, who was with the army, he was killed. So it's, there was a few people killed, and but everybody got to that stage where it was accepted, wasn't it?
Now, where were you when VE Day was celebrated? Were you still in Germany then?
No. We were home for VJ night.
Well, that's a lot later, yeah.
Yeah, but how much later?
Well, that would be August, or early September.
So when did we come on? May. We know the London.
Now, can you remember the atom bomb being dropped and how the effect of that, how that was received locally?
It ended the war in the Far East, didn't it, really? I mean, we didn't really know. To us, it was an atom bomb, and it didn't cause a great deal. But the general idea was, well, they've really bombed us, and this is a retaliation, isn't it? And it's ended the war. But I don't think we realised what real damage the atom bomb had done. Of what out and damage it was going to cause in later years.
So it was just was it universally accepted as a good thing?
It was Dr. Bomb, and it's finished the war. It's finished the Japanese war.